like that. He profoundly affected my life and my ministry. Well, have you ever met anybody like that? Somebody that just really touched your heart? This morning we're going to take a look at a man who, another man that profoundly affected my life. And we'll be getting to him a little bit here. But first of all, let's just do a little bit of review. You know, we're having a series here. And it's on the word faith. It's on Hebrews chapter 11. And what did we discover is another word for faith? What's another word that we use? Trust, right. Remember we gave you this little acronym, for all I trust him, you know? And faith basically is trusting God to the point that we're willing to be what he wants us to be. We're willing to do what he wants us to do. We're willing to go where he wants us to go. Now, that's easy to say, but boy, that is really difficult to do, you know? And so we talked about how we're all born with a little measure of faith and how whatever we do with that faith determines whether it's going to grow or not. And you remember we had a little expression, use it or lose it? You know, you've got to exercise this faith. And how do you exercise it? Well, first of all, you've got to ask Jesus to come into your heart. You know, that's a must. And then as God begins to, you got it. Well, we're going to talk more about it, a lot more today. But as God begins to point out what he wants you to do, then you got to step out and say, okay, Lord, I'm willing to do it. You know, lose it or use it or lose it. And so we got to exercise our faith. And if we exercise our faith, what happens is eventually a little faith grows and becomes great faith. And then eventually we'll become known as men and women full of faith. And that is the goal. That's what I want. Isn't that what you want? Then my last week, my wife talked a little bit about Abel. And I wasn't able to be here, but I understand it was a great sermon. I'll tell you, folks, I don't dare let her preach very much. Because one time I was preaching and she was preaching. And after the church service, I was standing at the door and this old gentleman comes up and he says, you know what, Pastor, we're going to fire you and hire her. But actually, I'm proud of my wife. But I understand she had a great sermon, but I wasn't there. She told me a little bit about it, but the fact is that, you know, whenever you start doing what God wants you to do, you're going to run into trouble. Because the devil is going to go to work. And, you know, that's what happened to Abel. It didn't always go right for Abel, but he did what was right. Another thing about Abel was that the way he worshiped God was doing what God asked him to do when God asked him to do it, the way God wanted it done. That's worship. Now, we come to a church service like this, and this is great. We call it worship. But real worship is day by day following Jesus. That's real worship, you know. Now, Cain had a problem with that. See, what Cain wanted is that he wanted to do God's will, his way, on his timetable, when he wanted to do it. And he didn't always want to do everything that God wanted to do. He'd go so far, and that's it. He would not let go and let God take control. He wanted to run his own show. And as a result, instead of bringing a sacrifice, he brought fruit, or brought his crop, you know. And eventually he wound up killing his brother. Now, the biggest problem that I've had in my life is that there's a lot of times when I have fallen in that trap of wanting to do God's will. I've always wanted to be a good kid, you know, a good guy. I guess I'm getting old now. But I've always wanted to do what's right. But, you know, I find it so hard to do it because I want to do God's will, but I want to do it on my timetable and the way I want to do it when I want to do it. I don't always want to do what God wants me to do when he wants me to do it, you know. That's where I get into some real trouble. And I suspect that a lot of us here in this room have gotten in trouble doing that. Well, at any rate, this is just kind of a brief review, but this morning what we want to do is we want to take a look at another one of these characters in Hebrews chapter 11, and where his name is Enoch. And I want to tell you, this man has profoundly affected my life, and I'll share with you a little bit how. But this man is mentioned three places in the Bible. And it's fascinating. I'd like for you to take your Bibles and turn to Hebrews chapter 11. We're going to look at all three verses. Hebrews chapter 11. Start with verse 5 and verse 6. And we're going to read these verses together. And I'm going to read to you out of the New Living Translation. I tell you, I like the King James in this area here, but today I've been reading this. This is my reading Bible, and I really like the way it reads, so I'm going to read this to you. But you can follow along, and you'll get the same message. It says, you got it? By the way, when you get it, look up at me. That way I know you got it. If you don't have it, I'll wait for you to get it. Okay, you got it? All right, let's look at the verse here. It says, it was by faith that Enoch was taken up to heaven without dying. Suddenly he disappeared because God took him. But before he was taken up, he was approved as pleasing to God. So you see, it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that there is a God and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him. Now these verses tell a little bit here, but three things basically. As you read these verses over, three things came to my mind. Number one is that the success of Enoch on this earth was dependent upon his faith or his trust to God. Did you get that? His success was as a result of his trust in God. Second thing is because of his faith or trust in God that God approved of him. And the third thing is because of his faith and trust in God, he was eventually translated and taken to heaven. So this is what it tells us. Now let's go to Genesis. Genesis chapter 5. And it tells us a little bit more about this faith and about this man. And so let's just take our Bibles and let's notice here what it says. Genesis chapter 5. Starting with verse 21. Now again, I like the King James reading here. And we'll mention that a little bit here. But it says, when Enoch was 65 years old, his son Methuselah was born. After the birth of Methuselah, Enoch lived another 300 years in close fellowship with God. Now, in the King James, it says he walked with God. I like the word walk. And he had other sons and daughters. Enoch lived 365 years in all. He enjoyed a close relationship with God throughout his life. Then suddenly he disappeared because God took him. Now, there's a lot in these verses. And I'd like for us just to take a few minutes and look at these verses. Now, let me tell you where most of the information that I'm going to be sharing with you comes from on this. It comes from this book called Patriarchs and Prophets. Now, this book is fabulous. In fact, the whole series, Conflict of the Ages, is fantastic. It puts flesh on dry bones a lot of times. But just what happened to Enoch? Well, let me just share it to you in a story, but it's here. If you want to read it this afternoon, you can take the book and read it on your own. It's fascinating. By the way, I think we ought to read these books. But what happened was Enoch was 65 years old. He had been born and raised in a Christian environment. He was seventh from Adam. In fact, Adam was still alive when Enoch was born. Enoch sat at Adam's feet, you know? But at the age of 65, he had all this knowledge. He knew about God, and he was basically a Christian. But he had a son, and his son, he named his son Methuselah. Now, some commentators say that the word Methuselah means this. Let me give you what he said. It means, when this man dies, there is going to be a great catastrophe on this earth. Now, I don't know if that name means it or not, but I'll tell you one thing. Methuselah lived clear up till the year that the flood came. Did you know that? He helped work on the ark. And when he died, shortly after that came the flood. But the fact is that he had this son, little baby, and as he looked at this little baby, somehow his heart just filled with love. And he said, oh man, I love this child. I'll do anything I can. I want my son to grow up, and I want him to always. And as he did that, all of a sudden a thought clicked in his mind. This is the way that God loves me. I am God's son. And as he began to mull this over in his mind, he all of a sudden said to himself, you know, God is worth following. Totally following. And he made a conscious decision. He decided that he was going to give his life totally to Jesus. And he asked the Lord of this universe to become the Lord of his life. That was the event that triggered what happened to Enoch. Now, I think this is very important. You know, it tells me that you can be born and raised in a Christian environment. You can grow up and go to our schools. You can graduate our schools, magna cum laude or summa cum laude or whatever that cum laude now, you know. But when you get done, if you don't have a relationship, you can do all that and still not have a relationship with Jesus. Now, I know. You know, I was a senior at Walla Walla College before I finally made that decision. I knew all about the state of the dead. I knew all about the Sabbath. I knew about this, you know, I knew about Christ's second coming. I knew about the judgment. But I didn't know Jesus. Now, every single one of us in this room have got to come to the place that Enoch came to. And as you study into this Bible, you discover that this is what happens to all the great men and women of this Bible. They all start at the same place. You see, we're all born into sin. We all have to make a conscious decision somewhere along our line to allow Jesus Christ to come in and take over our lives. It has to be a decision, our decision. And that's what happened to Enoch. But we all start at the same spot. You know, I think the story of Joseph. You know, he was 17 years old. He had been his father's pride and joy. You know, he really, if you read him, you know, I think he kind of was a little brat, you know. But on his way to slavery and uncertainty, 17, he made a decision to ask the Father, God of this universe, to become his God. I think of Isaiah. You know, Isaiah was just a young man, and one day he was praying, and he met God. And man, you want to read something fast, and go to Isaiah chapter 6, 5 and 6, and read that about him. And he asked God to come in and take over. You know, I think of the disciples, you know, they were in there, we don't know how old they were, some of them were quite young, some were probably middle-aged, but you know, they were all walks of life. But one day Jesus came and said, follow me, and I'll make you fishers of men. And they chose to follow Jesus. That was the deciding point for them. I think of Paul. He probably was in his mid-30s, you know. He was in the prime of life. He was headed for greatness. But he met Jesus on the Damascus Road. And there he gave his life to Jesus. Totally changed his life. I'll tell you, folks, we all start at the same spot. We have to make that commitment to Jesus. And if we don't make it, we won't make it. It's that simple. But here was Enoch. By the way, Enoch was 65 years old. That's how old I am. You know, 65, I can't believe it. But I'm glad I didn't wait until I was 65. But the fact is that we all have to make a decision. But now it said that after Enoch made that decision, you notice what else it says here? Enoch walked. Take your pencils and mark that word. Walked with the Lord. It is not enough just to make the decision. You have got to walk with Jesus. And that is a day-by-day process. If you don't walk with Jesus, you're eventually going to lose your relationship with Jesus. It's in any kind of a relationship, even in a marriage relationship. Men, if you don't walk with your wives and tell them you love them once in a while, you're going to lose them one of these days. You know? I'll tell you, I tell my wife every single morning when I wake up, honey, I love you. She doesn't care. She's sound asleep still, but I still tell her, you know? But the fact is, you do it. You heard the story about this couple that had been married for 13 years. And all of a sudden, she says, I want a divorce. Well, he was devastated. So they went to court, and finally the judge leaned over and says, why do you want a divorce? She said, Your Honor, well, we've been married for 13 years, and he's never once told me that he loved me. And he got this funny look on his face, and he turned and said, but I married you, didn't I? Hey, listen, people need to know that you love them. You've got to spend time with each other. And it's the same with Jesus. Now, let me talk a little bit more about this idea of making a decision for Christ. You know, it is, you ever heard this term, they call it burning all bridges. You ever hear that? You've heard that term, haven't you? Well, to me, making a decision for Christ is you've got to burn your bridges of all your past, and you've got to say, okay, this is the way I'm going. I remember when I first, you know, when I was just got out of the Army, I was footloose and fancy free, and I thought I was pretty good looking. And I decided, okay, I am going to date a bunch of girls. I'm just going to date them. I'm going to go with them 3 times, and I always left a bridge so I can run back across it. You know, I wasn't going to get caught. I was going to have a great time. But boy, when I met my wife, after the 3rd date, I burned all bridges. I mean, I burned them. And it took her a year and a half to, convince her she should marry me, but I burned them. And I'm glad of that because, man, we've had almost 43 years of a great time. Well, sometimes it's kind of rough, you know. But the fact is, this is what it means. You've got to burn your bridges and you've got to say, okay, Lord, I am totally yours. But you've got to do that every single day. And this is what Enoch did. He walked with God. Now, how did he walk with God? Well, it doesn't tell us here, but this book tells us. That's why I think you ought to read it. Because as you read this book, you'll discover that there's 4 things that determined his walk with God. And let me share one with you quickly. Number one, every day he talked to God. We call it prayer today. Every day he learned about God. We call that Bible study today. But back in those days, he didn't have a Bible. He had nature. But as he walked and he would talk to God, he would find out everything he could about God. 3, he fellowshipped with other believers, and there was other believers in that time. They got together and they fellowshipped, and they worshiped. They did what we did here. And 4 is that he finally came to the point where Christ just oozed out of him so much that he just had to share Jesus with everybody. And if whatever Jesus asked him to do, he did it. Wherever Jesus asked him to go, he'd go. Whatever Jesus asked him to be, he would be it. That's how he walked with God. These are the 4 things. Now, let's go back over this so you can get this. Now, we're going to talk a lot about this in this series because you'll notice that as we go through these various men and women in the book of Hebrews 11, that this is the key to all of their relationship. It is these 4 things that make them, take them out of the ordinary and make them extraordinary. 1 is what? Talking to God, prayer. 2, learning about God. Again, that'd be Bible study where you can read other things, nature. 3, fellowshipping with each other, huh? And praising God together. Yes, that's very important. And that's what, 4? Obedience and witnessing, sharing. You can't separate witnessing from obedience. Obedience goes with it. You put these 4 things in your life, and I can guarantee you that you are going to make it. The devil can't get to you if you have these 4 things in your life. It's true. Now, let me talk a little bit about this prayer part of it. That's all I'm going to have time to talk to you about today, because this clock just keeps running by. But let me talk to you a little bit about this prayer time that he had. You know what prayer is? Prayer is simply taking time and talking to your coach. My wife wrote this book called Going for the Gold. It's a fantastic book. But there's one chapter in that book that's on praying. Praying to win, she calls it. That to me is worth its weight in gold. And she brings out that during the Olympic Games, there was Mary Lou Retton, you know, and you remember, if you remember that, she did this perfect Tim, the gymnastic, you know, and she ran over to this old man, and she wrapped her arm around him, he wrapped his arm around her and said something to her, and then all of a sudden, she ran back over, and she did the perfect 10 twice, again, you know. And I thought, who's that old man? Well, it turned out to be Barry Caroli, her coach. And she said later on, if it wasn't for my coach, I would not have been a success. Well, let me tell you something. We have a coach that's far better than Barry. And that coach is Jesus. Our coach loves us and cares for us. And he will never, never let us down. Whatever he asks us to do, it's going to be for our good. He never takes anything away from us that it's not for our, that we need to get rid of. Our coach has been down the road we've been down. And He knows the road to success. And He wants us all to be successful. And that's what praying is. Talking to our coach. Letting our coach talk to us. Now, Enoch was a busy man. It says here that he had sons and daughters. He had a family. He had to make a living. And he had to work. But Enoch determined that he was going to put on the front burner his relationship with God. That was going to be number one. And that's what he did. He always made sure that every day he had time when he could talk to his coach. And folks, that is the secret. That's the start of the secret of Christian. That's the start of a secret of life, successful life. Spending time with your coach. And every day he'd take time out of his schedule and he talked to the coach. Now there was times, as you study in this book, Patriarchs and Prophets, there was times when he felt like he needed to spend extra time with his coach. And so what he would do then is that he would take maybe 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 hours. Sometimes he'd take a day or 2 days and he'd just go off and spend it all with Jesus. And when he came back, he would just be radiant. Now, he was a very inquisitive person. He wanted to know about things. And, of course, he didn't have the Bible like we have it, but he had this relationship. He talked to the coach, and he'd take these walks with the coach, and he started asking questions. He wanted to know what was going to happen at the end of the world. He wanted to know about the state of the dead. He wanted to know about a lot of things. And he started asking his coach, and God began to reveal these things to him. And notice what it says over here in Jude, verse 14. Jude, verse 14. It's a very interesting statement over here. Jude, verse 14. I'll wait for you to get it, so I know you got it, and you look up at me when you get it, and I know you got it, okay? All right, here, pages turning. I'll wait. All right. Notice it says, verse 14, now Enoch, who lived 7 generations after Adam, prophesied, and notice that word prophesied, about these people. He said, look, the Lord is coming with thousands of his holy ones. God will bring the people of the world to judgment. He will convict the ungodly of all the evil things that they have done in rebellion and of all the insults that godless sinners have spoken against him. He gave a prophecy. You know, God began to reveal these things, and guess what he did? He began to reveal to everybody around him. He couldn't keep his mouth shut because he knew. Now, we're not going to be able to talk about all these other things, but we're going to spend some time later on. I'm giving you a lick and a promise today on getting into God's Word and studying it, but we'll get into that more. And this idea of fellowshipping, it is vital. By the way, talking about fellowshipping, I think that I want to invite you to, on Wednesday night, you know, it's been mentioned already, but we're starting this class called Experiencing God. We only have about 8 or 9 of these books left. And we had 28 to start off with. But this is the book that we'll be using. It's written by Henry T. Blackaby. Blackaby is another Baptist preacher, but boy, this guy is a saint. I've gone through this book 7 times, and I haven't yet to find a spot where it isn't right on with the Scripture in the Bible. He should be an Adventist. But it is an excellent book, and we're going to go through this book. It's life-changing. Now, we only have 9 of these books, a courtesy of Hart. Hart gave these books to the church, and we're using them. But there is a charge for this. Now, let me tell you what the charge is. First of all, if you want to come to this, you speak to my wife. And the first thing is, if you take a book, you've got to come. If you take a book and don't come, I'm going to talk to the Lord about that. Second thing, there is a small monetary charge. And it's not that we need the money in the church. You know, these books, we got them from nothing, see? But we are going to charge you something for them, and I'll tell you why. And the reason for the charge is because we found out that when you get something for nothing, you usually don't appreciate it, you know? So it's a small charge. This book normally sells about $20 if you do buy it at the bookstore. But it's $5. And if you can't pay for it, just let us know and we'll give it to you. But I want you to get into this book and read it. And I know that it's best for you to put something into it. So this is a great book. We're going to have soup and salad on on Wednesday evening, and you come at about 6:15. We'll eat together, and we'll take some time, and we'll go through this book. Okay? And this is a fellowship. You talk about fellowship. We're going to have great fellowship. But coming back to this prayer life now, Enoch would take time, and he would go off, and he would spend some time, 2, 3, 4 hours with Jesus. Have you ever done that? Boy, that's a neat experience, I'm telling you, Lou. You try it one of these days. Maybe we'll give you a chance to do it one of these Sabbaths. We've had these retreats over there in Hawaii, and we'd send them off for an hour, and that 1 hour was the best thing about the retreat. Everybody commented, that was a life-changing event, spending 1 hour with the Lord. But anyhow, he did this. And it's as he got closer to Jesus, he just kept getting closer and closer until finally, one day God said, hey, why don't you come on home with me? I like what one little boy says. He says, you know, I can tell you how Enoch went to heaven. He said he kept walking with Jesus, and every day he walked a little closer, a little further, a little further. And one day God said to him, you know, Enoch, you're closer to my home than you are yours. Why don't you just come on home with me? And that's what basically happened. He was translated. But you know, the title of this series is Faith Still Works. Now, the question has to be asked, what does Enoch's life have to do with me here today? I want to tell you something. It has everything to do with me today. Because I've come to the conclusion that what Enoch did was the key to his success and his translation. And what he did is possible for us to do today. I remember when I was a little boy in the third grade, first time I ever heard about Enoch, and the teacher was going over this, and I remember thinking to myself, wow, what kind of a man was this man? Man, is it possible to really walk with God? And to be that way? Wow. I wonder if I could do that. Well, you know, I was just a little kid. I put it out of my mind. Many years later, I got to reading and started reading this series through, Patriarchs and Prophets, and I got to this one on Enoch. And I like when I read these things, don't go fast, just take your time. And just I sat back and I started thinking about Enoch. And I started thinking, is it possible? And I came to the conclusion, yes, it is possible to have a walk like Enoch had. It is possible. Let me just quickly share a little experience with you just to share with us. We're talking about the prayer part. You know, I told you about how I didn't want to go call portering and got forced into it by the Lord. So I went and did it, and I hated it, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And after I spent my time there, I had enough money to go to the seminary. Believe it or not, my seminary was totally paid for from call portering, and I'm a lousy salesperson. But at any rate, I went to the seminary, and I'm not going to go into the story right now because I'm going to use it when I get into the story of Abraham, but I got a call to the ministry, going to East Pennsylvania. Now, I didn't want to go to Pennsylvania, but the Lord made it clear, this is where you go. So I went to East Pennsylvania, interned in Harrisburg, and then finally in Reading. I was there for about a year and a half, and then they sent us, my wife and I, off to a place in the northwestern part of Pennsylvania called Dubois. Now, I don't know if you know where Dubois is, but let me tell you about it. My district was 140 miles long and 70 miles wide. In that district, I had four churches. My largest church had 26 members, and that was at Brockway. And my smallest church had 7 members, and that was at Punxsutawney. And you all know Punxsutawney, don't you? That's where the groundhog is from, you know? I've been there. And we had this little church, 7 members in Punxsutawney. And as I would go to that church and I would preach, they all went to sleep. Well, I used it for practice. I worked it out so I'd always go to Punxsutawney first because I knew they were going to sleep. It doesn't make any difference. They're not going to get anything out of it, you know. And then I'd go to the next church and I'd practice my sermon as I'm driving along, you know, and I was not a good preacher then. But I don't know if I am yet, but I sure enjoy it. But at any rate, I'd use that. But I hated that place. We both hated it. I wanted out of there. And I thought, man, the only way I'm ever going to get out of here, nobody even knows I exist except when ingathering time comes, you know. I thought, I got to baptize people. So I drove, I put over almost 40,000 miles on my car the first year I was there. I had one of these little Valiant, Plymouth Valiants. I'd drive up all these little gullies and all these little, you know, I can still remember that, you know. I put almost 40,000 miles on my car in 1 year, and we baptized two people. And they were ready for baptism before I ever got there. I'll tell you, I was going nowhere fast. And I thought, I don't think I'm cut out to be a minister. Well, about that time, somebody gave me this book called The Cross and the Switchblade by David Wilkerson. You want to read a book? That book changed my life also. I'm not going to go into the story. I wish I had time this morning, but my time is running out. But boy, that was so fascinating. I read that story, and I read about this preacher who was a nobody, and all of a sudden he started praying every day. And through this prayer, he goes to New York City, and man, I'm telling you, the gangs in New York City, and you know the story. If you have never read that book, you get it. By the way, David Wilkerson is still alive and still preaching. I get his newsletter, and it's fantastic. That guy is a real saint. But anyhow, I read that. And as I read that story, all of a sudden this thought struck me. I could be like David Wilkerson. All I have to do is the same thing. January 1, 1964, I decided I was going to start praying. Now, I'm a preacher. But I decided I was going to start praying. I was going to pray at least 10 minutes every day. So I went up to my bedroom. Got on my knees. Now, you don't need to get on your knees, I found out, but I did. I got on my knees and I started praying. Man, I prayed everything I knew what to pray. My mind ran out of things. My knees were aching. I looked at my watch and only 3 minutes had gone by. So I prayed the same thing all over again. And I just said, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to stay with this for the rest of my life. And I'm still with it. It's a lot longer than 10 minutes, but I want to tell you, that was the start. And you know, it's so interesting. I look back and I have to laugh because I was praying. I said, oh, Lord, lead us to people that need Jesus. Please just lead me. What I didn't tell him is I wanted him to lead me to these people so I could baptize them, so I could get a good name and get out of there, you know. But God led us to people. I'm telling you, I could tell you some really fantastic stories, but that year, 13 people, precious people, were baptized. And I got a call out of there, and I took it. I went to North Carolina. A nice district there. I still had four churches. I could tell you some really neat stories, baby, but we don't have time. Somebody want to stop the clock? But anyway, I was in New York. I was there in North Carolina. And I stood up the first Sabbath I was there, just a young buck. And I said, folks, first year that I'm here, we're going to baptize 25. Next year, we're going to baptize 50. The third year, if I'm here, we'll baptize 100. And they started laughing. Later on, a little lady said to me, she said, you know, Pastor, when you said that, I looked at you and I said, this kid's got a lot to learn. Some better man than him has been here, and they didn't do it, and he won't do it. Well, the first year I worked, and I learned a lesson. You know, pray. Put these people on your prayer list. Pray for them, you know. And I learned some other lessons, but boy, this was it. I found out you spend more time with Jesus. The more time you spend with Jesus, the more you're going to get accomplished with the time you got left. Do you know that? You remember Martin Luther one time said, I've got so much to do today, it's going to take me 3 hours to pray it through. It's true. I'm telling you, folks, if you spend time with Jesus, the time that you have left, you're going to see great things take place. So I put these people on my prayer list. That year we only baptized 13. And I was so upset with God. I chewed him out royally. I mean, I told him a few things, you know. And I told him, he said, a lousy 13? Man, Lord, I've got this big list of people I've been praying for. You gave us only 13. Well, I went to workers' meeting. And at this workers' meeting, Elder Andrew Fearing was there. What a saint. He's dead now, but he was a wonderful saint. And he stood and he told his story. And, you know, he's one of these people that just, you know, and he really influenced many. And he said this. He said, men and women, listen. If you're going to be a success in God's work, you've got to put God number one. Your family number two. Your work number three, and you're last. Well, I didn't like that. Now, I'm a model railroader. I jokingly tell people I'm a trainaholic. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm a trainaholic. I can't drive past a hobby shop without my car just being, it just goes in there. Next thing you know, I'm in this place, you know. I can't believe it, but I'm in there, you know. I didn't have any money, but I could sure drool, you know. And I remember one day, I said to myself, man, if there's not going to be any trains in heaven, I don't want to go there. Then suddenly the thought struck me, there's not going to be any trains in hell, and I don't want to go there either, you know. So, but I had a problem. Now, trains are not wrong. I'm still a model railroader. I'm going to build a master train set one of these days if the Lord will let me. You know, that's what my plan was when I retired. I was going to build trains. Guess what? I'm here. And you know what? I'm glad. But at any rate, I had this problem. And I said, Lord, I just want you to be number one. Help me to get things straightened around right. Oh, God, I just want you to be in charge of my life. But please, Lord, I'd love to see 50 people brought to you this year. Oh, God, it's in your hands, but I'm yours. You know, that year, the Lord brought 64 people to Jesus. Boy, did I learn. The more time you spend with Jesus, the more it's going to happen. And you know, all of us can do that. We just have to make time in our schedule and say, this is it. I'm going to spend this time with Jesus Christ. You've got to make it number one in your priority. Faith still works. We just have to exercise it. Well, my time is up. I wish I could talk to a lot about a whole lot more things here. But let me just say this, you know, there's a little adage that goes like this. Beware of what you set your eyes on. Because eventually you're going to get it. Now, did you catch that? Remember that. Beware of what you set your eyes on. Because eventually you're going to get it. You set your eyes on wrong things, you'll eventually get it, plus a lot of trouble. But you set your eyes on Jesus, it's fantastic. You know, we spent our last 3 years in ministry in Hawaii. And if you have to retire, you want to retire in Hawaii. Those people threw a party for us that was absolutely, I was humbled. And I tell you, I couldn't help but cry. But the humbling thing about it was is that those people kept coming up and they saying, Pastor, you don't know what an effect you've had on my life. Pastor, through you I found Jesus. Now that's the humbling thing. And as one of these individuals, a good friend of mine, was talking to me, all of a sudden I thought back to the time of Criswell when I was there in that church. And I thought, maybe after all these years, I am becoming like Criswell. Beware of what you set your eyes on. Because eventually, you're going to get it. I've chosen to set my eyes on Jesus. I want to walk with Him. You know, there's so much more we could say about this, but I want to tell you it starts with, first of all, giving Jesus your life. And then you stay there by walking with Him every day. And it starts with having a prayer life. Talking to Jesus every day. We'll talk more about how you study and pray. And I mean, we'll even talk about this extended prayer time and fellowshipping and so forth. But this is where it starts. And it's something every one of us in this room can do. We got to close, but let me just say this. It's exciting being with you folks. I know that in this church, there's a lot of you folks here who have made that decision for Jesus. You've made it. And that's wonderful. Stay with it. But I also know in a church this size, with this many people, there's somebody in this room here today. Right now, you're struggling with something, some sin or something, and you just haven't gone all the way with Jesus. You're holding back, but you know today is the day. You can make that commitment to Christ totally. And if today could be the greatest day of your life, you could start an adventure with Jesus. You don't have to be 65. Maybe there's some young person here that's struggling with something. Today could be your day. Maybe you're in your mid, having one of these midlife crises and so forth. Today could be your day. I don't know where you're at, but you know. And as we come to the close of this church service here this morning, if there's someone here this morning who needs to make that commitment to Jesus and need to say, Jesus, please come into my life and take over. Today is your day. Here's what we're going to do to close this service. I want us to take our songbooks. I want us to sing. I want us all to stand. And what is it? What's the song number? 390? Or is it 590? What is it? Okay. I want us to sing this song, Trust and Obey, 590, right. And I want you to notice the words as we sing this song. I want